Hi there, and welcome to the Engage Employee podcast, where you'll discover the latest insights, opinions, and trends within the industry.
Today we're joined by Charlotte Dahl and Graham Pools. Charlotte is one of the chairs of our virtual Employee Engagement Summit on the 11th to the 13th of May, and is a director at specialist advertising agency Wood Reed. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, and facilitator with a unique view on employee engagement and internal communications, having spent equal parts of her career in consumer and employee communications. Graham has 2 decades of HR and management experience across a range of industries. He serves as People Director at Bupa ANZ, responsible for employee experience. Bupa is a health and care company committed to helping customers live longer, healthier, happier lives. They offer a range of services, including aged care and retirement, dental, optical, health insurance, and community wellbeing initiatives to improve the health of all Australians and New Zealanders.
So hi everyone and welcome to today's Employee Engagement Podcast ahead of the Employee Engagement Summit in May. We're sitting down with some of our world-class speakers to host some exclusive interviews ahead of the event to share a kind of insight into the challenges they face in recent times. If we're lucky, just a little sneak peek into their presentation. My name is Charlotte Dahl, and I will be chairing day 2 of the summit on the 12th of May. And I am delighted to be joined by Graham Pools, who is the People Director of Employee Experience at Bupa. So Graham, hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be on the podcast.
It certainly is. We're really looking forward to hearing you talk today. Okay, so let's just kick off. You know, I'm sure we're all pretty familiar with Bupa. It's kind of, you know, it's a global brand. But tell us what we need to know.
Yeah, so Bupa is 88,000 employees worldwide in a number of countries, and I'm the head of employee experience for Bupa Australia New Zealand, which has 22,000 employees across the full suite of both health services, which is dental, optical, visa medical services, and a defense force contract, plus health insurance, plus aged care in Australia and aged care in New Zealand.
So I didn't realize, am I actually speaking to you in Australia?
Yes, you are. Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, where are you?
I'm in Melbourne.
Brilliant. Lovely Melbourne. I know it well. My husband's Australian. This is a random side little fact for everybody. Fantastic. Yeah, there you go, fellow Aussies. So can you just tell us a little bit more about then what your role at Bupa entails, please, Graham?
Yep. So as the People Director of Employee Experience, I have a remit that used to historically be called the Shared Services Portfolio. So I've got reward, some recruitment, we've got data analytics and reporting, which is where this work that we're going to talk about tonight came from. I have the mandatory learning portfolio, the digital solutions team. There is a chunk of frontline people support and people services, I'm about to pick up payroll and the time attendance teams as of the 17th of May. So it's a sort of expanding portfolio that covers the pre-hire all the way through hiring processes, through day-to-day on-the-job activities within our systems and the HR tools, all the way through to termination at the end.
Gosh, and so are you Bupa through and through, or have you recently joined? How long have you been with the organization?
I've been with Bupa for 3.5 years now, which is pretty good for me. I generally sort of stick around two and a half, 3 years, but the draw card here is that it's just such a wide-ranging and diverse group of clients within the different parts of the business that, you know, it never gets dull.
It sounds amazing. Fantastic. Okay, so just kind of something to focus on what you're going to be talking about at the Employee Engagement Summit. So you're actually opening our day on the 12th, which is fantastic. And you are going to be talking around your contact center retention strategy. Now, it's a well-known fact wherever you are in the world, actually, the call center turnover in general is considerably higher than average in organisations. So what was Bupa's driver for your programme of work that you're going to share with us?
Yeah, look, and exactly what you just said, you know, the turnover was higher than we had expected and higher than we wanted. We realised we had a number of tools that we were using when we were employing people, and we wanted to check to see you know, how long were they staying with us, and what type of person was staying longest, and were we losing high performance people, or were we losing only those sort of middle of the road, or were we, you know, sort of just seeing turnover in the sort of the people who had work to do and weren't living up to the expectations of the role. And what we found was quite interesting, you know, that there was a range of different types of personality that were better suited to the roles and had got better customer results as well. Which led us to say, okay, well, if we want to bring in and engage the right type of people, what do we do from a retention strategy perspective? And that's where the work spawned from. And we did a lot of really detailed analysis of the information relating to the people, where they were, where they came from, where they lived, even to see if the commute potentially to the office — this is pre-COVID, mind you — whether the commute to the office was a hindrance or not, how their performance ratings stacked up against their metrics, a whole suite of information.
Okay, now was this a piece of work that was done in Australia, or did it embrace your global customer service employee base?
Yeah, no, it was just the Australian business. So we did a pilot with our contact center, and what we created was something that is repeatable. And so the intention was, we did the first one with the contact center and fed that back to the business, and then we created it in a manner that we can repeat, using the same systems, the same tools, the same metrics, to come up with the exact sort of same analysis every time, which will then help with creation of retention strategies for each of the different parts of the business, which then enables us to better engage with our new hires and our existing employees as well.
Absolutely, it's fantastic. Okay, so you kind of touched on tools and systems. So can you give us a bit more detail now? Can you talk to us about the kind of tools and systems that you used to analyze the information?
Absolutely. So we started off with obviously the core HR information that we got out of Workday. So we as a global organization, our users of Workday is our HRIS. And so we extracted the contact center, a year's worth of the contact center employee data, and turnover data. And then we checked that against our sort of our pulse survey results. How satisfied were these people, and were they getting, you know, was the satisfaction scores and the engagement scores super low? Was that a contributor to it? We overlaid that with their performance ratings from the annual review cycle, the mid-year review and the end-of-year review, to say, are we losing, like I said, just the high-performing people because they're not challenged enough, or they're bored, or we're not paying enough? So we overlaid pay data as well, looking at market analysis. And we also brought in the hiring information that we got using a predictive insights tool that sort of said, these are the types of personalities that you're hiring. Here are the ones who've remained. These are the types of personality profiles that are leaving a lot. And how can we then go to market looking for a certain type of personality which we felt were better engaged with the work and would therefore stay longer. So then we took all of that sort of bulk of data and we handed it to some data scientists who did their crazy data science work on it.
Their magic, their alchemy.
Oh, it's unbelievable, yeah. And the ability they have to crunch that data and make it look really cool and present back insights is phenomenal. And we were very lucky to have some good in-house capability.
I was going to say, so could you use a combination of in-house and some outside resources as well?
We did, yeah. So we looked to our, because it's customer service, there were lots of customer data that we could look at to see how many sales were these people making, what types of interactions were they having, what was their NPS score with customers, as well as looking, we gave some of the sort of the non-sensitive data to an external party and said, can you crunch these numbers for us? And then we overlaid the two. And that's how we came up with the final kind of analysis that we're on the day of the conference. I'm going to present a slide that shows the sort of synopsis of all of that work and how we laid it out to say, this is what the outcomes were and this is where we're going to take things.
Okay, and can I just go back? You were talking about personality. What model were you using for your personality types analysis? How deep did you go in terms of your personality analysis?
Yes, so every single person who is recruited into the contact center runs through a tool called Predictive Insights, and it essentially categorizes their personality traits and assigns them a different type of personality driver set that we then overlaid, like I said, against their performance, against their sales stats, against their salaries, against their, you know, et cetera. And what we found was there was a couple of certain types of personality that were leaving more often than not. And so we kind of made a couple of calls on a strategy front as to how we would deal with that information when we were in the hiring process from now on.
That's fantastic. And obviously you're going to tell us more about the strategy when you talk at the summit on the 12th of May, which we're really looking forward to. So this sounds like, this sounds like an amazing piece of work. Is it pretty pioneering in your in the customer service arena?
So the Bupa ANZ organization certainly hadn't done this type of work before. It was brand new. It was something that but they kind of said, we've got a retention issue. And we said, well, let's do a retention strategy and figure out why people are leaving and how we can engage with them to stay longer and the types of people we need to bring in. So it was very, very new. This was a pilot. So what we're going to do with this pilot then is test the effectiveness of the strategy on the next couple of intakes and then move down the track to say, okay, who's next? Which part of the business are we going to do this next in? And we designed it to be a repeatable process, so you don't have to reinvent it every time with different types of data. You pull the data. We know the sources. We know that they're trustworthy. We now have the algorithms and the sort of data science behind it to run the numbers every time consistently and achieve similar types of insights.
Okay, fantastic. And you're talking about the fact that it was something quite new to Bupa. Did you have to work hard to convince the business that this is something they needed to invest in? How did you go about engaging the business behind this really key initiative?
Yeah, interestingly enough, we did it on a shoestring, we tend to like to do things in pilots without spending a whole lot of money on it to see if it'll work. And we didn't need to spend a whole lot of money. And the key piece of sort of cash we spent was on one small external party who did a bit of data science for us. And that was sort of, a week's worth of number crunching that got us to a point where we could then blend it in-house. We engaged with them and said, we want to do this work for you to come up with a retention strategy. We'll then help you with employee engagement. We'll sort of talk about, the employee profile types that we could use and reference in the recruitment process and highlighted the fact that, the engagement will save them money because if you have less turnover, you spend less on hiring, you spend less on training people, you get better productivity. There's no speed.
It's quite an easy argument to win, really, isn't it? It's not going to cost you much money.
It is,
and look
especially
at all your
when
potential
we said,
savings.
Correct, and we'll do it for you for free is basically what we said, and we did. It's my favorite price. I always tell people my favorite price is free. We did it for them and said, here's a tool. Now we can repeat this across all the other parts of the business, also free, when they're ready and when they're sort of they're ready to be engaged.
Because I guess what you did is you took data that existed already and just did clever stuff
Correct.
With it, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's where the data scientists are. They're amazing, the work they do, bringing it together and crunching the numbers to say, here's what this means. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And did you, I don't know whether you mentioned, I just didn't pick it up, but did you use exit survey data at all in this?
We did, yes, but our exit survey data, we don't have much, to be honest. And
right.
So it was more around where we had it, what were the insights that we could glean from that, but it was pretty spotty, to be honest. It was more around the kind of the input from profiling, from stats, and from, sort of engagement survey results.
Okay, great. So how long did this piece of work take?
It actually only took a couple of months to do, which was great. So we had the genesis of the idea. It was November time, 2019, started the prep work in December, January, February, and it was done just before COVID hit. So it was a great thing to kind of present to the contact center. And then COVID happened and everything sort of went on hold, but we still had the insights that we could use in the recruitment process during the COVID break while we were trying to staff a completely remote workforce at that point in time. So it gave us some insights to help when they weren't going to be in the room together. How would we bring the right type of people in and keep them engaged by having the right, the right attitude and the right mindset to start with?
Yeah, I bet you couldn't believe your luck with getting the piece of work started before COVID, actually, because obviously, as you said, the insights have really helped you kind of shape your strategy during the last year.
And look, and it's interesting, isn't it, that the things that were a really big ticket item in November, December 19 suddenly sort of disappeared off the radar come March 20. So a really interesting time to be in corporate, I would say, because there was there was a complete pivot of priorities.
I have to say, I have to agree with you. I think although the pandemic has clearly just been an absolute nightmare, it's been an amazing time to work in corporate business.
Yeah.
The debates we're having, the discussions, the kind of the transitions, the opening of people's eyes to the art of the possible, the agility people are displaying, our behaviours and attitudes that I really don't want us to lose as we go forward.
And you think about the engagement opportunities with creating a hybrid or permanently remote workforce and the benefits of that. I mean, and simply in contact center terms, having a contact center from home model means we can now recruit from anywhere in Australia.
I agree.
It doesn't matter if they're in Melbourne or Sydney. You know, they can be from you know where, and it doesn't matter.
I know. And actually, you know, from experience that I've had of working with clients who have had massive contact centers, they are sometimes quite, you know, in the old way of, you know, the kind of the old world where you just had hundreds of people all sort of together in sort of like almost like an airport hangar sometimes, just big, unwelcome places often. And then you'd expect people to do hard jobs. It's very exciting for contact center, and actually it'd be very interesting to see moving forward how in the general contact center world our turnover is impacted by the new hybrid workforce.
Definitely. And I mean, you think about the engine room of any good workforce in a corporate sense, it's usually the contact center, because they're the ones who are on the phones with customers all day in, day out, them in the front line, who are in storefronts and whatnot, are the people who are engaging with customers on a real-time basis.
Yeah.
I mean, my role as employee experience, we try and do things from a perspective of when we need to have touch points with managers and employees, is it simple, is it efficient, and is it as automated as it can be to save them time so we can get them back on the phones with the customers and so we can get them back into the storefronts with the customers and not annoy them with needless HR mumbo-jumbo, basically.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's a complete shake-up, isn't it? So anyway, back to this particular initiative. Is what you did repeatable or one-off? I'm kind of guessing that the fact that you talked about the fact that this was a pilot, and you now have you've got a model in place. I'm imagining now that you're going to scale up.
We designed it specifically to be repeatable across each of the different business units within the organization, because we have very unique parts of the business in each of the different areas. So the contact center is one part of health insurance. There are a number of other parts of the health insurance businesses who could run the same model over, because, like I said, the data that we've mined is extractable from core systems that then feed into the same data model, which then gives the same analysis and insights. So we're poised and ready to go into the next parts of the business that are interested.
Yeah, so tell us which part of the tend to examine next.
So ideally, we want to do aged care next, because aged care is a tricky beast and also has fairly high turnover for a variety of reasons, because it's a difficult and you know, often thankless job. And so we want to be able to help that as well and say, okay, here's the retention issues that we've discovered. This is how, you know, an engagement strategy and retention strategy could work. And we're just kind of waiting for some of the dust to settle on. Royal commissions and things down here before we suggest that they might be the next cab off the rank.
Fantastic. Actually, yes, obviously there's a real kind of social conscience and kind of purpose to doing that kind of work as well, actually, which always makes us feel good, right? Okay,
yeah,
cool. So you go on.
I was going to say that's where the sort of the values and the purpose of the organization really shine. So, you know, longer, healthier, happier lives, it's really something that the aged care portfolio and look, and all parts of the business are really focused on, and so being able to help them engage with their teams and retain the people who are like-minded is super critical.
I love that, because actually what you're doing is contributing directly to your organizational purpose, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah, that's really good. So, and you mentioned a profiling tool earlier. How have you changed the way that you use it now? I guess it was kind of saying, what did you learn and how have you adapted?
Yeah, well, it's helped us refine the types of profiles that will go through the shortlisting process. So it's not the be all and end all, but if you know someone comes as one of the profiles that is very low on the retention scale, then clearly the stats and the history over the year and year and a half worth of information we pulled means that we would shortlist them out. So we've been able to refine our recruitment process to only put forward candidates with the right type of profile, which isn't, you know, sort of a it's purely a personality type of profile. What type of people are best suited to this context
of intervals, course.
Who are the ones who stay longest, and that's really helped us refine that recruitment side of things.
Fantastic. Okay, so just kind of talking about performance data, what sort of rating scale do you have, and how do you know who's at the top and who's at the bottom?
Yeah, and that's a tricky one, and one that we grappled with a little bit. So we only have a 3-point rating scale. It goes work to do, working well, and working wonders. And it's not a forced curve. It's not a, you know, sort of it must be 10% of these and 80% of those and 10% of these. It's a natural curve that emerges. And so what we were looking at was generally the top end of each of the ratings would have the higher increases based on their performance and potentially higher bonuses and sales incentives as well. So we were able to trace it, and this is where the data scientists really came to the fore to say, we said we've got this information, we're not really sure how you take a 3-point scale and show the depth and breadth of it that actually exists. And they were able to really tweak that and come up with some good insights for us.
Brilliant. Okay, that's fantastic. The business. What was the business? How did the business respond to this program? How's it landed?
Yeah, so they were really, really happy, and because it was something that hadn't been done before, and it was relatively groundbreaking from a BANZ perspective anyway. I mean, there's probably other organizations that have done this type of work, but we hadn't, and we hadn't mined the data that we had efficiently and effectively to come up with this strategy. They were wrapped with it and sort of have changed some process and things, which we'll talk about in the longer session, and came up with, you know, this the kind of the working hypothesis of what they wanted to do moving forward, which was great.
Brilliant. Okay, and of course you are going to share with us much more detail about the strategy that emerged as a result of this program of work when we hear you talk at the May Summit. Fantastic. I mean, is there anything else that you want to share with us before we wrap this up, Graham?
No, I think that's kind of covered most of the sort of the salient points from the presentation that I'll be doing, and I'm just really excited to be part of the conference and looking forward to presenting.
You're going to be doing late night presenting, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Well, it's been absolutely lovely to get the opportunity to talk to you before I introduce you at the summit. And so just to let everyone know that Graham will be speaking on the 12th of May, actually opening day 2 of the Employee Engagement Summit. Thanks, Graham, and good luck. Goodbye, and I'll see you virtually next month.